between Don Mueller and Walter Langford is being recorded in Don's home in St. Louis on May 5th, 1987.
Okay. Don, tell me in a few words your start in baseball. How'd you get going here in St. Louis as a youngster?
Born and raised within 2 miles of where I live now.
Yep.
Back in those days, there was no American Legion baseball. Mm-hmm. There was Sunday baseball. My brother is 3.5 years older than myself, and I played with older boys. Mm-hmm. This led to my being a choke hitter. My dad, incidentally, played for Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. I know.
24 through 28. You can pick that up through the register.
Yeah, I've got his record, yeah.
In the baseball register, he's listed as being from Central Missouri, which is
that.
A little town that is no longer here.
Mm.
And my record shows me that I'm from Creef Coeur, which is actually in the same area.
Yeah.
So, being, I guess I was 13, I was playing with boys that were 17, 18. In order to get my wax, I had a choke up, and I was a left field hitter. I couldn't get around on those kind of kids. But going 2 years later, getting into Legion ball, I was with kids my own age, and I just naturally I could kind of do just a little bit better. I went down on the bat a little bit. Never was a hitter with his hands down on that knob to where mm-hmm. you got everything.
Yeah.
But I hit home runs in Legion ball probably. Oh, I'd say. We had a small schedule, maybe 15, 16 games,
mm-hmm.
but I maybe hit 10 home runs in 15 games. And I'd hit 600 for 2 years that I played, and that was really fun. When you get to play ball with kids your own age,
that makes
a difference. And you had to play against kids older than you, made a lot of difference.
Mm-hmm.
So. I had offers from, at that time, there were 16 big league teams.
Yep.
And the only team that I didn't have a contact from was the Philadelphia Athletics, Connie Mack,
mm-hmm.
his outfit. Cardinals offered me probably the best contract, but you might research this, but I think Sam Braden still owned that club in 1944.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad said, if you want to make better than average money, go where your big ballparks are. He said, go to New York.
Yeah.
Mellott was, he was one of my main idols. And he was managing the Giants. So I went to New York. Could have gone to Chicago, to the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Grimm was a,
yeah.
He was a teammate of my dad's at Pittsburgh.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Cubs didn't want to give me the money that we were looking for, and Charlie had stock in the Milwaukee club.
Right, I know that.
And he said, I'll buy your contract, I'll own you, I'll send you to Milwaukee. And Dad said, no, Jim Gallagher was the general manager in Chicago.
Yep.
He says, you'll get in hot water. The Cubs don't want to pay you this money. And sooner or later, the problem is going to come up. You wanted him. The general manager didn't. So that's why I didn't end up a Cub.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it was a good move.
Yeah. Cubs were going down, and the Giants
were doormats, and but to play in Wrigley Field, I think I would have.
Oh yeah.
I would have prospered there.
I have no doubt.
Yeah.
I have no doubt.
But going to New York, I was in on two pennant winners.
You sure were.
And
two famous ones.
I think it. Yeah, that 51.
Yeah.
Like I told this boy yesterday in this interview, my wife was pregnant, and she was having a hard time delivering.
Mm-hmm.
And on September 1st, I hit 3 home runs against the Dodgers.
Good grief.
And on September 2nd, I had hit 1, and Monty Irvin was the next hitter. He was in the on-deck circle.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me back, and the count was 1 ball and no strikes. He says, "We just got a phone call down that your wife had a baby boy."
Oh, boy.
Next pitch, I hit number 5. And I only hit 16 all year. Only hit 1.
That's what the record
after
says.
That.
Yep.
So, something inwardly was happening. I don't know what it was, but I wasn't a home run hitter because I carrying back from my earlier age, I knew the best way to stay in the big leagues was to spray that ball around.
You're so right.
And I tried it the first 2 or 3 years with the Giants, just laying back, because the Giants in those, when I came to them, they set the league record with 221 home runs in 1947.
That's right.
So I came in.
Willard Marshall, all those guys.
They made that trade in 1949. They got rid of Sid Garden, Willard Marshall, Buddy Kerr, and Walker Cooper.
Yeah.
And we got Eddie Stanky and Al Dark. Now we got all together different ball club.
Yep.
Leo's managing. He's a running manager.
Mm-hmm.
You hit and run, you squeeze bunt,
yep.
You play for 1 run. You don't play for the big inning.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, can this swinging from the heels, because my minor league record was singles, doubles, and average.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, that's when I started to progress.
Great. You remember your first game in the majors?
Yes. I pinch hit. I was hitting, I'd say 350 at Jersey City in the International League, and I went 0-for-28. And Leo said he needed a left-hand pinch hitter.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my chance. And Fred Fitzsimmons was our coach. And he took me out there that morning, and he threw batting practice to me for, I guess, 45 minutes. And we were playing the Cardinals that day.
Mm-hmm.
And Murray Dixon was pitching. Leo says, go up there and give him a whack.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit a line drive to right field. Base hit.
Great.
Triple A, 0-for-28.
Yeah.
Big leagues, 1-for-1.
On your first day at bat. That's wonderful. In those years, in your first years there, you had guys like Johnny Mize and Rigney, all of those that got traded, Kerr, Gordon, Cooper, so forth. Anything unusual or interesting happened in those first two or three seasons before you became a, well, your first two seasons before you became a regular?
I'll tell you, first of all, we made the trip to Chicago, my first road trip, and I was, we were on trains in those days,
yeah.
And I was rooming with Johnny Mize in the Pullman. Of course, he had the lower bunk, and I was on the upper bunk, yeah. And he was smoking those big black cigars, and of course, all that smoke was rising on me, and I'm not a smoker. I never smoked.
Good.
And he was just burning my eyes so bad with that smoke, and I went to the traveling secretary. His name was Eddie Branning, long-time baseball
man. Yes, I know his name.
And I says, Eddie, this man is burning my eyes off. I can't stand it. Get me another roommate. Mm-hmm. So I got another roommate. But that little incident about a cigar smoke, it tore me up later on when I was in a carpool and we had a young catcher by the name of Sal Evars. And he smoked cigars, and he burned my eyes. And we lived together in the same little town. I moved up to where he lived, and we had a carpool.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't stand cigar or cigarette smoke. It just tears your eyes up.
Yeah, when you're not a smoker, it's an awful thing.
Walker Cooper. boy, he treated rookies nasty. He'd chew tobacco, and he'd come by you, and you'd be sitting there, and he'd spit tobacco juice in your shoelaces.
Oh, golly.
Now, you're 20 years old, and he's 30, and he's a big hunk to where you're not going to tear into him, so you just take that abuse.
Yeah.
Or he'd walk behind you, and he'd light a cigarette and put it in your pants pocket.
Oh, for crying out loud.
he was really a practical joker. And
all of the old-timers tell me that when they came up as rookies back in the 20s and 30s, they couldn't get into the batting cage at all. The regulars wouldn't let the rookies even come near the batting practice. I suppose that had maybe diminished some of the time
you
got up.
Yeah, that faded away. Yeah. I didn't see any of that. There were rules that your starting lineup, the extra man hit for 20 minutes, mm-hmm. and then your regulars that were playing mm-hmm. would get another 20 minutes, which gave you enough hitting time.
Yeah. 1950, you became regular outfielder. Who did you replace, more or less? Who had been?
Willard Marshall.
Oh, yeah, when he got traded.
Willard was a good ball player.
Yeah, he was.
Home run hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
He went in that deal to to Boston mm-hmm. in the Stanky Dark deal.
Yeah. Well, you had a good first season as a full-time player. Well, a .291 mm-hmm. average.
One little incident.
What was that?
In spring training, we played Cleveland. They were training in Tucson. We trained in Phoenix. So we played Cleveland quite a bit. Al Rosen was our third baseman.
Mm-hmm.
And him and Leo got their heads together. And I had... Leo saw something in me, but Rosen, Dale Mitchell, was their left fielder, uh-huh. and he was a consistent 300 hitter.
Yeah, I bet.
Rosen says, Leo, I'll bet you $500 that Mitchell will out-hit Mueller for the year. And the 1st of September came, and I was hitting 330. And Mitchell was hitting maybe 318.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how ironic it is, whether it plays on your mind or what, but I sat down with a pencil and I figured out how many hits I would have to get for the next, say, 25 games
mm-hmm.
in order to maintain that same, and he'd have to do better.
Yeah, true.
And you know, I went 0-36.
You're kidding.
And I ended up hitting 291, and Mitchell hit about 315. Leo had a fark over that 500, and I felt so bad.
Yeah.
When the season ended, I walked into Leo's office, and I haven't told anybody about this.
Mm-hmm.
I walked in there, and I said, Leo, I said, I'm sure sorry that I lost you that $500, because I knew the bet was on.
Yeah.
He had told me in the spring what was going on. I don't know whether that's against baseball rules or not, but it was just a friendly bet.
Yeah,
at that time, $500 was a
lot of money.
In my mind, it was a lot of money.
That's right.
I don't know whether it was a lot of money for Leo or not, but I lost it for him.
Mm-hmm.
And all because I use that pencil, and I put a little too much stress on.
That's right.
I think I still hold that record of the 0-36 with the Giants. Not a good one, but it's a record.
Yeah, well, everybody's got to have some bad ones with the good ones. What did they pay you your first full year?
Minimum salary then was $5,000.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
That's what most of the old timers tell me.
It was, I don't think everything else put in respect or perspective doesn't jive with the way salaries have gone. It's terrible right now.
It's really unbelievable.
Yeah, whatever the owners might be doing to try to correct this thing, I'd have to say they're going in the right direction.
Absolutely. The majority of the public says that. We've been polls in the latest sport magazine, Inside Sport and elsewhere, and showing that about 87% of the fans feel that the owners are headed back in the right direction now, holding the line.
When I was playing, you could look at DiMaggio, you could look at Musil,
mm-hmm.
and you knew who the stars were.
Absolutely.
They were making that $70,000,
yep. $80,000, $90,000. Yep.
Nowadays, you can't tell who a star is by the money that they're making.
No, of course not.
The owners have been held up so bad.
Well, they had themselves largely to blame.
Now they're going
to have to correct it, and they're doing what they can.
They're doing it, and they're getting, there's a lot of screaming going on.
That's understandable. The Players Association is going to
squawk. It's like this morning's paper. Lonnie Smith is a 296 lifetime hitter, and nobody wants him.
Nobody wants him. Played the only player ever to play on three world champion teams.
That's what they said.
Yeah.
And
in pretty short order, too. I think Phillies in the 80s, St. Louis 82, and Kansas City 85. In six seasons, he was on three World Series champions with different teams. Well, in 51, you picked up people like Willie Mays and Monty Irvin. And Tookie Gilbert left that year.
Tookie Gilbert.
Yeah.
He was a classic ball player that just never got a grasp on it, but he, what was his dad's name? He owned the
New Orleans.
He owned the Nashville Ball Club.
Nashville, how's that? I ought to know that.
Was it Larry?
Larry Gilbert, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Tookie was a good friend of mine, and he died real young.
Oh.
I don't think he was 30, 36 years old. Yeah, good hitter.
Now, you guys were 12 and a half back on August the 15th that season and put on a stretch run that has few equals. What sparked that mostly? Leo, obviously.
I couldn't really tell you, except that we
just all came together.
It all came together, and we had some old heads pitching.
Mm-hmm.
Magley.
Yep.
Jansen.
Yep.
Coslow.
Mm-hmm.
Sheldon Jones.
Mm-hmm.
I read the paper just word by word, and I can't understand what's going on with pitching nowadays. That fellas hit two home runs a ball game, they hit three home runs in a ball game,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a lack of knowledge of pitching, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think the hitters have gotten so much better. I think they're just brushing the pitchers out of Class A ball.
Yeah.
The next year they're in Triple A. Next year they're pitching in the big leagues, and all they're doing is throwing, and you don't get nobody out throwing.
Yep. It sure has changed. Certainly. I mean, now they got to have a five-man rotation, and nobody is expected to finish a game, hardly ever.
No.
The reliever has become more important than starter almost.
And then they're looking for the middle man, and then they're looking for the relief pitcher.
Yeah.
Joe Page probably was the first prominent relief pitcher.
One of the first, that's right.
With
the Yankees
and Hugh Casey with the Dodgers.
That's right.
Of course, 3 years later, we had Hart Wilhelm, and he made his niche. He was my roommate.
To fine science, yeah.
Yeah, he was my roommate for about 5 years.
Oh, good old Hart. I was sitting in Pittsburgh. I was on the side at Notre Dame. I was tennis coach for 14 years and fencing coach for 15 years. Had NCAA champions in both of them. We were, my tennis team was in Pittsburgh, and we were playing Pitt and Duquesne, and I was went to my car over by the side of the courts, and Hoyt Wilhelm was pitching in the game. This is in April or May.
54, 55.
Yeah, and he hit a home run that day.
That was his first. That was his first game
that's
that he
right.
played.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that must have been 53, I guess.
Yeah. Could 53 would be more likely.
Yeah.
Then I later saw him pitch many times when he was with the White Sox. I'd go from South Bend up to Comiskey Park very often to see the Sox play. All right, so you caught those guys and at the last game of the season. They had to pull a rally to win the last game against Philadelphia, as I remember.
Right.
And you go into the playoffs. Now, in the first game, Hearn wins it on the mound, and Thompson wins it with a home run against Branca. Which should have said something to Dressen, but it didn't apparently take. In the second game, Levine really controlled you.
Yeah. What was it, about 10-1?
10-0.
10-0.
Yeah. And then it comes into the third game, and Magley and Newcomb go along great 1-1 for 7 innings. And in the eighth, they get to Magley for 3, and it looked like it's curtains. Newcomb retired side in the bottom of the eighth. And
Newcomb was a good pitcher.
No
not finesse, just
power.
big, power, strong, 6'6" guy who just blew that ball, reverting back a little bit. Leo used to be on Newcomb from inning one. And in those days, the racial issue was still
alive.
Still there. And he'd just stand up there on that edge of that dugout, and he'd give him some of the terriblest things. He'd say, "You're going to spit that bit plus blah, 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 blah," and he just...
He got to it.
He told, he'd say, "We're going to get him. If we get a good pitch game, we'll beat him." And that was his philosophy. Well, that was Leo's philosophy. All through his career was just rag somebody till you got him rattled.
Get to him. Yeah, I know that.
And we could, if we had a good pitch game, we could beat Newcomb because he would just keep pumping that fastball and that slider, just humming it, and he'd mow you. But you'd catch up to him because you can't throw that hard for nine innings.
That's right.
And if you had a good pitch game, you could catch up with him.
Yep. Okay, so we come to the bottom of the ninth, and you're down 4-1, and it looks like curtains. But
Aldark single.
Aldark single, and then you single.
I singled. And my philosophy of hitting, I guided that ball pretty good through the infield. I think that's my stop.
So you're on your single sent Dark to second, as I remember.
There was a controversy that Hodges shouldn't have been holding Dark on first base. That he should have been playing back, and if he had been playing back,
he might have cut off.
He might have caught the ball that I hit. But if he had been playing back, I wouldn't have been hitting the ball.
No, you would have angled it a little.
I would have probably gone through the middle.
Yeah.
This was my philosophy of hitting. You slice one between the third baseman and the shortstop. The next time up, the shortstop, he gives you a couple more steps into that hole.
Yeah.
That opens up the center.
That's right.
And that was my theory of hitting.
Good theory.
Between that and hitting line drives, I could play the game that way.
Real good. All right, now, Irvin pops out. Ottman comes up and hits one to the opposite field.
Left field.
Yeah.
Bounces off the left field wall. I'm going to third base.
Dark's already scored.
Dark scored, and I'm looking over my shoulder, seeing whether the cutoff man is going to get this ball, and if it's a bad throw, I'm going to score. And here is where people say I slid into third base, but I didn't. I was looking over my shoulder, and when I made my last two steps to third base, I overstepped the bag, and I turned my ankle, and I pulled the tendons out of both sides of my ankle bone. So I didn't slide, but when I rolled that ankle, it looked like I slid. Everyone thought, the sports writers thought I slid, but I didn't, because I was running.
Now, I read that some places that you strained the ankle badly, and other places you broke it.
It was the pulled tendons. They pulled it out of both sides of my ankles. No broken bones. I was in the hospital through the series in the Polo Grounds, and I made the sixth game in Yankee Stadium. I was sitting on a bench with a cast in my on my leg. And I think I would have liked to have gone up there and hit with a cast on. But
You probably could have.
I can remember that last play when Sal Ebars hit that line drive to right field and Hank Bauer came in and slid on his chest.
Yeah.
Third out, ninth inning, and it was all over.
Yeah. Now, back to the, when you slide into third base and hurt your ankle, Hartung comes in to run for you.
Hartung ran for me. And
then and Bobby that, hits the...
That was a trivia question, who was on third base.
Yeah.
Recall that?
Yeah. And now, were you on the bench or had you gone into the dressing
room? I was in the dressing room.
You didn't see the
took me off
famous
in a
shot?
I didn't. All I heard was the crowd roar and I thought, well...
Did they have
went
they
down the drain.
Yeah, they didn't have a that's what
didn't have a radio in there.
Didn't have TV then
no.
In those days.
Didn't have a radio or nothing in there, and I thought it was all over till you could hear them coming in just
roaring.
Just having fun.
Oh boy. That's
so it was
that's been called the most famous home run in baseball history.
They said that shot heard around the world.
Heard around the world, that's
right. What they call it.
Now, let's...
Going back.
Yeah.
Just one more point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nowadays, if a wife's going to have a baby, fella usually flies home and stays 3 days.
Yep.
If that would have happened... In my case, I hit those 5 home runs in those 2 days. We beat the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Beat them pretty good, about 9-3 and 8-2 or whatever it might have been. You can research that.
Yeah.
Someone else had been playing right field, we might have won both of those ball games. Mm-hmm. Then again, Bobby Thompson might never have had that chance to be what they remember him for.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Had he not hit that home run, he'd have been an ordinary baseball player.
Yeah. A good ball player.
Good ball player. But
after we sold him and he broke his ankle, he was
never
the same ball player.
Never the same thereafter. That's right. He'd had his moment of glory.
One of the best runners I ever saw from first to third base.
Mm-hmm.
He could, probably 2 steps, he'd cross this room. We were up in West Point.
Mm-hmm.
Every year we played with the cadets.
I remember that.
And they had a kid up there that could, he was a blazer in 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, we're going to race Bobby against this kid and see what happens. This kid comes out in track shorts, no socks, track shoes. Thompson's got his uniform on,
mm-hmm.
all this heavy
wool
uniform.
That's right.
They start him off, and then 30 yards, Bobby's looking over his shoulder. And he just watching that kid back there, and he just run away from him. Yeah, he was that good at being a sprinter.
That's wonderful. I think it was Travis Jackson told me that Bill Terry was awfully fast, and people didn't realize that he was so big and such a powerful hitter. And in spring training, they were playing some American League team and who had a fast player, and Jackson made a bet with some of those other players on that other team that Terry could beat anybody they could put up. So they brought out, I don't know, Heine Mnuch or somebody who was supposed to be fast. Terry just left him, just like you say, in this case. You never realize how fast some people are. Now, here are 3 questions that about the ninth inning there that was so sensational. We can't answer them, but I'm sure Dressen went to his grave wondering about these. Should he have let Newcomb start the ninth inning? Because they say that on the bench,
had told Dressen I might be losing it, kind of at the end of the rope. Then when he did decide he had to yank him, he brought in Branca, but he had Preacher Rowe and Carl Labine warm me up in the bullpen with him.
Labine pitched...
Pitched the shutout the day before.
The day before.
Yeah.
Yeah, but all he needed...
All he needed was a couple of batters.
Was a couple
Maybe
batters.
One.
Yeah.
With a double play. Rowe hadn't appeared in the series at all. Maybe he was holding Rowe out, figuring he'd start the series against the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one. But he brought in, he let Newcomb start when maybe he shouldn't. He brought in Branca, maybe not remembering, he had to remember that Thompson had beat Branca in the first game with a home run.
Mm-hmm.
And then first base was open, and he didn't walk Thompson because you don't put the winning run on base with a walk. But Willie Mays was following, and he had not had a good playoff, and he hadn't had an outstanding season. He hadn't reached his potential yet.
Right.
And the possibility of a double play is better with the bases loaded.
It's questionable that he could have blew it right there.
Yeah.
No doubt that Labine could have come back just for what they were going to need him for, for one or two outs. Labine had a fantastic overhand curveball. I mean, he had a good curveball.
Yep.
To throw Thompson a high fastball, that's bad. Bad news.
It may be that Dressen was thinking that Branca was a lot more experienced. He was in his fourth or fifth season, and Labine was a rookie in that year. But Labine was hot the day before.
Yeah, I think he could have. Yeah. Well, he could have probably made the difference there. You never know that. It's one of those controversial things.
Now, I see that... the series share for the loser in the 51 World Series was $4,951, which today would just be the real joke.
Yeah. 1954, we drew the largest share
up to then.
Team up to that point.
That was $11,118.
$11,000.
Yeah.
And nowadays it's $60,000.
60 to 80, depending on the parks they play in.
So it's really, really a small amount.
Yep. Okay, now in 52 you came in second. 4.5 games back at the Dodgers. And in 53, you dropped to fifth place. Then in 54, you won again. Any particular thoughts on why you went down as low as fifth in a couple of years from 51 to 53 and then jumped back first again?
No, I really couldn't tell you about that, like we were saying initially. It's been so long ago that these little things that make so much difference have escaped my remembrance. But Antonelli had to be
big one in bringing you back up to the top. That's right.
Right.
And old Sal was still around, but...
And we had Ruben Gomez.
Ruben Gomez and Don Little.
Yeah, Don Little was a...
Marv Grissom and Horton Wilhelm.
Starter, and Wilhelm and Grissom were our relievers.
Yeah, and they didn't mean much. Each got in a little bit during the 54 series, but just two and... fraction innings, each one of them, because they weren't needed.
No. We had good pitching, and this is what we were saying before. You get old heads pitching, you can go a lot further than trying to go five innings like they do nowadays. You know it. I was playing an old-timers game, I guess, 5-6 years ago out in San Diego. And I got on a plane out here at Lambert, and Magley was on the plane coming from Niagara Falls. And we sat there and we were conversing, and here is where I was a dummy by not talking to old pitchers about what pitchers do to hitters. I knew what I wanted to do to pitchers, but I didn't ever turn it around and say, what are the pitchers doing to you?
Yeah.
And you'd see some of the some of the wickedest line drives and balls hit up in the upper decks off of Magley, but they'd be fouled. And I said, Sal, when you were pitching, did you deliberately take something off of those pitches right in their wheelhouse, but inside? He said, that's the name of the game.
Yeah.
He says, you don't want to try to
overpower
strikes past them until you get them two strikes.
Change speeds on them.
Change speeds, let them hit those strikes, and then give them your best stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where he was sharp.
Now, I don't know whether it had anything to do with Magley's career, but before he went jumped to the Mexican League, he wasn't all that great a pitcher.
No.
No.
Sal was a mediocre pitcher, but he went to Mexico, and they had that high altitude.
That's right.
And down there, you can't throw a curveball in high altitude.
You know it. Yeah.
And he got to where he could snap and get by down there, but when he came back up here in this heavy air,
it was
he had a heck of a curveball.
Yep. It made his
career. And he was mean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He looked mean and he was mean.
He was mean.
Yeah.
He'd knock your hat off just as soon as look at you. And that was his bread and butter.
Yeah. They say that the 54 series was about as big an upset as the 1914 Braves walloping Connie Mack's Athletics in four straight, when both the Athletics and the Indians were big favorites to win the series. I talked to Al Lopez about that, and he says, if we had played the first two games in Cleveland, it might have been quite a different story, because Wirtz's 460-foot drive would have won the game, and even if it came down to where Rhodes hit that 260-foot fly, it would have been an out instead of the home run that won the game in the 10th inning. That makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense. On the other hand,
but there are always ifs and so forth, second guessing. But the games were played in New York, and that's what happened.
That's where we picked up the edge.
Yep.
But that was the year that Cleveland set the all-time record,
American League,
for wins.
Yeah. 111.
And they were playing Rosenhurt.
Yeah.
He had a groin pull. Dobie had a groin pull. And they played those guys. They were shooting for this record instead of resting them. Now, maybe Al didn't tell you that.
No, he didn't mention that.
But he played them hurt. And
caught up.
It caught up with them. I mean, they didn't. I couldn't sit here and say that either one of those two fellows or both of them had bad series. I don't recall that.
Yeah,
but
either.
Cleveland, they were immobile. They couldn't they couldn't do what they would have done if they were healthy.
Rosen hit 250 and Dobie 125 in the series.
Now you got your two big guns.
Yep.
And they're hurt. They had to play hurt. And all for the sake of this record, I think that could have turned that.
Yeah.
Made that series a little more compatible.
You're undoubtedly right, but effectively, psychologically, the first game, the series was decided.
Oh, by
when,
that.
When Wirtz hit a mammoth shot that Willie Mays ran down and caught, and then Rhodes comes up as a pinch hitter and hits a little simple fly to right field, drops in.
True.
They just were completely taken off stride, and they never recovered. Rhodes I don't know whether he was voted the MVP of the series, but I think he was.
I really couldn't say. I don't remember.
I could check that up.
But Dusty, Dusty has put him in a category by himself.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a baseball player. When the Giants... I thought I was.
You were.
When I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
around here, just playing Sunday baseball, mm-hmm. I thought, well, you can hit that ball. During the war, they discontinued baseball. I went to CBC.
Mm-hmm.
So we played softball so we could stay close. All of the Catholic schools
mm-hmm.
in the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
And they surprised me how they could throw that softball at that sharp distance.
Yep.
I batted like heck to hit 350 in softball.
Is that right?
Hit that big ball.
Yeah.
I thought, man, this is going to be easy pickings. But Dusty played a lot of softball, and that's where he
got
the quick bat.
Yep. Quick wrist and bat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you had a great series that in 54. You, 7 for 18, 389, scored 4 runs.
I think Alvin...
Drove in one.
I think Alvin had... I think he had one more hit than I did.
No, according to this, Don, he had the same.
Did he?
He had one less time at
one
bat.
One less time at
yeah.
bat.
Yeah.
And I think I went over... I must have been 1 for 4 in one of those, in the first game, probably.
Well, let's
against,
see.
The first early game, win.
You were 2 for 5 in the first one, 0 for 4 in the second one.
That was early win got me that
yeah.
game.
And 2 for 5 in the third, and 3 for 4 in the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Three out of four games you were really producing.
Now, Cleveland had a heck of a pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
And if you sweep them 4 games, you're talking about Lemon, Wynn, and Garcia. I don't know who started the fourth game.
Well, Lemon came back. Yeah. They didn't use Feller in that series. He was practically finished.
So Lemon pitched 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
He was the first man that had the really good slider.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know what a slider was till I played ball for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. That was still new.
And I was back in Class A ball at Jacksonville in the Southeastern League, and we had Bob Hooper. He threw that slider.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd hit the slider like I would hit the fastball. And you'd throw at the same speed, except that it just moves maybe 3 inches.
Yeah.
4 inches.
That's
and
right.
I started noticing that, well, that fastball is moving. And I
talked to Hooper, and he says, well, that's your slider. They just, right-handers will just try to start it in the middle of the plate, and they'll move it in on you.
Mm-hmm.
But I, Newcomb had a slider, but as hard as he threw, you swung at his fastball, and you let your eyes do the job, because it was still a fastball, except that it was going to eat you up if you didn't get around on it.
I'll say. Okay, now, what happened in 55? You finished third, but you were 18 and a half games out.
Yeah, isn't that something?
You had a good year yourself, though.
I hit 333 that year.
Yeah, well, let's see, in 55...
No, I hit 308.
306, this thing
306?
You drove in 83. Right. Drove in 83 runs, which is the most, except for your first full-time season, you had 84.
That's hard to tell you. In 80... In 53, what did I hit in 53?
53, you hit 333.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, that year, I had to hold out to the last day before I went to spring training to get $1,000.
Oh, did I?
I think I was making... $14,000, and you hit 333, and you can't get more than $1,000.
Well, was that the highest you got?
I got up to 25.
Good. Very good.
But nowadays, if you hit 260, well, you're looking for 100% increase.
You got utility men hitting 225 that are getting $300,000 a year.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. I've got three boys, and my oldest boy signed with the Cardinals. He was drafted by them out of junior college, and he played for 2 years in the Cardinal farm system. Cardinals won the pennant that year, and everybody on the club was holding them up for money.
Yeah.
Instead of holding the line with their big club, my boy was at Anderson, South Carolina, and they advanced him to Cedar Rapids in the middle of the year. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the year, they disbanded the club because it was too costly.
Poor cried up.
And it was because they were trying to pay the parent ball club salaries. So they sent him packing. Now there was my boy that... should have been a big league ball player.
Mm-hmm. Wiped out.
Wiped out.
Yep.
And I would have had the first three generations in the big leagues.
You're right. Has there been any since?
No, I don't believe so.
I don't know of any. Yeah.
That hurt me something terrible.
That
a ball club, right now the minor leagues have shrunk to the point to where you're not getting quality ball players. And this goes right back to the point of why there are so many home runs hit.
Sure.
You've got established hitters, and they're throwing these kids out there to slaughter.
Yep.
And they're slaughtering them.
They sure are.
It's good fan. It's good fan.
Yeah, the fans, a lot of the fans like that, but boy, there's still a lot of fans who like to see the tight ball games that are crucial and... Where you play for a run?
Myself, I never had liked to go down to a ballpark and watch a 3-1 or a 2-0 ball game.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see hitting.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see the running and the sliding. Mm-hmm. High score ball games means excitement.
They're exciting. Yeah.
To sit there and watch strikeouts, that doesn't turn me on. But
that's.
You need it. I mean, that's part of the game. But
yeah. Well, the two things go hand in hand, the enormous number of home runs and the unbelievable number of strikeouts. Everybody is swinging for the fences, and
you're right.
If you do that, you're going to strike out a lot.
I think one year I struck out five times and 430 times at bat.
Gee,
but I didn't give that pitcher anything to work with. I was a hacker. I went up swinging. They couldn't throw a pitch up there that didn't look good to me. You can verify by looking through my records that I didn't have many walks.
No, you didn't.
But I put that ball in play. I advanced a lot of runners. That's one thing. Nowadays, they'll say, they keep statistics. This man advances so many men a year. Back then, they didn't do that. And what I did to give up myself to get a man from second to third was, and Chubb Feeney, he just retired as National League president.
Yeah.
He was our general manager. Just out of, I think, Princeton. Tough man. Tough to get a nickel out of. And he disregarded all those things. And he looked at it, and you hit 280. You hit 280. Didn't matter.
But what you did
what
in the process.
What you did in the process. Right.
Boy.
Tough. I mean, he's a friend of mine, but I'd say he's a distant friend when you think about what he cost me. And I was doing what Leo wanted, but Leo never went to the front. I got a letter in that cabinet there that when I signed the contract, and it came out in the New York papers, what I had signed for. He says, "I'm sorry to hear that." He says, "You're too valuable to this club to be playing for what you're signing for." But that didn't register on Chubb.
Yeah.
He had me, and that was it.
Now, in 56, Bill Rigney took over as manager.
That was my downfall.
You went down to sixth place, 26 games back. How do you mean your downfall?
I pulled a groin muscle in 56, and there wasn't such a thing as a disabled list back in those days. You sat on a bench and you recuperated and you played. And I pulled that muscle so bad I still got scars.
You're kidding.
And they would tape me from my knee through my waist, and I couldn't hardly walk up the steps. Remember the Polo Grounds had those high steps?
Oh, they did.
I had to drag my leg to get into the ballpark, and they taped me up, and I'd go play.
That's
and
just
I
being
had
a half
change,
a player. And
had to change my way of hitting. Used to be I'd hit that ball, I'd move the infielders, and I got a lot of infield base hits because I'd put them in a hole to where they couldn't throw me out. And hit line drives. Well, when I was playing with this injury, and it went through the whole year, 56 and 57.
Yeah, I see your average dropped.
Yeah.
To 269 and then to 258.
I'd have been about a 310 or a 312 lifetime if it wouldn't have been for those
2 years, yeah.
Because
yeah,
those were my time at bats.
No doubt about it.
But it hurt me. Hurt me terrible. And the other thing about Rigney, and he's a friend of mine. I know Bill real well. They sold me to the White Sox in 58. That was the year the Giants went to San Francisco. To go to a new city that's never had big league baseball is the greatest thing can happen to a
to a ball player.
Because of the novelty of...
The novelty.
To those fans.
Plus the great fishing that was going to be in San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah.
And they traded me to the south side of Chicago. Now, there is possibly the worst thing that could happen to you is to either that or be traded back to Philadelphia. I went up there and I was having a good year in 58. And Jim Rivera,
yep,
Jungle Jim, playing right field, and we were playing the Washington Senators. And they were having a pitcher, the name of Jim Constable, pitching for him.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be a Giant.
That's right.
I said, Jim, I says, watch this guy, because he's sneaky and he's wild inside, and he'll hurt you. Mm-hmm. He hit Rivera. I think he broke his arm. I'm not playing. I'm just pinch hitting and playing just
off of the
spot.
Yep.
Well, I play, and I'm not really ready to play. Mm-hmm. I should have been. Why not? You should be in shape to play. But
boy,
I pulled that groin again.
Yeah.
And I was hitting maybe 340, 350. And tapered off. I hit 230 something. And and there was another loss cause. And I pulled that muscle, and and it stemmed all the way back from 56. They never let me heal up.
Never got a chance to.
So the last 3 years was bad times.
Yeah. Now in 59, your last season, you just played a few games.
I played till June 15th, and they cut me. I was 2-for-4 pinch hitting.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
I came up with arthritis. I got the gout.
Oh, golly.
Age 32.
Yeah.
Couldn't put the shoes on no more. They said, and they left me in the hospital. I thought I had a broken foot.
Mm-hmm.
I played on a Sunday, and on Monday we had a workout, and I come out to the park, and I couldn't hardly stand up. And the club was going on the road, and they said, well, you stay home. If you can't do us any good, well, we'll leave you home. And I laid in that hotel room, and I hurt so bad for a week that I lost about 15 pounds.
Gee whiz.
I couldn't stand up.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't go get something to eat, and I was starving.
Oh, God.
And went back to the hospital the second time. The first time they couldn't diagnose it. The second time they found it. And I was still in the hospital, and they gave me my release.
Mm.
Nobody even came to see me.
Oh.
They just called me over the phone and says, your contract has been negated.
Yeah. Who was the general manager then? Do you remember?
Vic was the vice president.
Yeah.
Or he was the owner.
The owner, yeah.
Yeah, I went in and I...
Greenberg was there with him, I think.
I went in and picked up my last checks and came home.
Yeah.
And I tried to go back. I called Fred Haney up in Milwaukee. I said, mm-hmm. Fred, see, Fred played with my dad in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, Fred, need a pinch hitter, I can help you. He says, I know you can, because he was a Pittsburgh manager in the National League.
Yeah.
He says, but I got this young boy, Bob Hazel,
who used to
be my left-hand pinch hitter. He said, I'm sorry, I can't do nothing for you.
Yeah.
So Detroit called, and they said, if you want to go to Portland, we'll send you out there. Well, that's furthers from my mind to go out and try to beat my way back when I'm when I'm hurting.
Yeah, when you're not fully right physically.
Yeah, I could sit on a bench and I could pinch hit and go with the pain, but not to go play every day just to try to get back. So I hung him up.
That's too bad. At 32, you're too young to be quitting.
Yeah, but when you got something like that bothering you, you can't help it.
They say gout comes from excessive drinking and eating rich food. And then I see all these guys, and I'll name no names, but how many are on each roster that abuse themselves?
Oh, God.
And they play to the ripe old age.
Yep.
And here I'm cut down when I'm 32.
It's not right.
No, it
really.
You can't say it leaves a bitter feeling.
Well,
because
gotta
it's
be
written. It's written in the books.
Yeah, but it's got to be a lot of disappointment there.
Oh, there. Yes, yeah. There was.
Yeah. What was your biggest thrill in baseball?
Probably that last month of 1954 when Willie and I were battling it out.
Yep.
I mean, that's a prolonged thing when, you know, when you're going down the stretch and it's day to day and there's three guys that are going neck and neck.
Mm-hmm.
And I was leading on the last day. Duke Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
And Willie and myself, and I was leading by a fourth digit of so many.
Yeah.
That fourth digit percentage point.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know it by statistics, but it had come out in the paper that Willie had not hit Roberts good.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my hits off of Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
I felt, well, I got this thing in my pocket. But it didn't turn out that way. Willie, instead of doing what he normally does, is try to pull the ball, he went to right field and he hits shots that day. And he hit 345. I ended up hitting 342.
342 and Snyder 341.
Huh. Well, so that kind of blew my bubble as far as the World Series go. You could say, what's your biggest thrill? It wasn't the World Series. It was
that struggle down.
I had big disappointment.
Yeah. Well, you still had a fine series. My goodness. Now, what was your worst moment in baseball? When you sprained the ankle, or when you got the groin pull?
I'd say the worst single moment was, I think, Harvey Haddock struck me out three times here in St. Louis.
Well, that's no disgrace.
And I said I struck out five times in 1 year.
Yep.
And Harvey got me three times in one ball game.
Yeah.
And to me, he was the hardest pitcher to hit, and he was a little guy. He was only 5'9", 5'10", but he was just a carbon copy of old Harry Burkeen.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up under Harry, and Harry
bottled himself
this
after
was a
Harry.
Terrible place to come to play ball. When you come into St. Louis, they had Burkeen and Lanier, Paulette, and Brazel in a bullpen.
Yeah.
And I'm a left-hand hitter. Coming home, and I wouldn't play half the time because it was this platoon system, this left and right business.
Yeah.
But those guys should have been all somewhere else. And if I'd have come into St. Louis and they'd been right-hand pitching, I'd have been able to play at home.
Sure.
But I didn't get to play that much. But I did hit one home run off of off of Hardy, Harvey down here.
Yeah. But, what would you call your best game?
Oh, it might. Best day.
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't know whether that would have been the day that I hit those three home runs or the two. I'd say it was the two home runs where when my boy was born.
Uh-huh.
But then again, I hit for the cycle against Pittsburgh. I don't know what year that was.
Yeah.
It might have been 56.
Yeah.
Dick Littlefield was pitching for Pittsburgh.
All right.
And I had a single, double, and a triple. And Littlefield was a left-hand pitcher.
Yeah.
Normally, I didn't try to pull left-handers. I moved it the other way because you got to wait longer on the curveball.
Mm-hmm.
And I ripped him the last time up for the home run. So. But I still think it would have been one of those two games in 51 when my boy was born.
Yeah. All right. How come your father just played a few years for Pittsburgh?
Mostly competition, I think.
Yeah. He was, as I remember,
he was a
pretty good batting average.
Pretty good little hitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't a big man, but he was a strong man.
Yeah. What was his last season with him? 24?
I think 27.
No, I don't think so. By that
maybe 28.
Well,
23, 24. 25 and 26, maybe.
Yes, he was with him in 26, and of course that's the season that Paul Wehner came up.
They had
Max Carey and Kai Kyler. That's competition, all right.
Competition.
The next year, in 27, when they won the pennant, they had Lloyd Wehner, too.
He stayed home.
Yeah, he wasn't on the lane.
No. Stayed home the year before they won that pennant.
Yeah.
He was in the trucking business.
Uh-huh.
They did all the brick hauling for the Alton Brick Company.
Uh-huh.
Him and his brother had trucks. He played some infield, but then again, you had Ty Trainer at third base.
Oh boy, you sure did.
So, you take the two Wehners and Kai Kyler.
And even old Max Carey.
Park Trainer.
Yeah. And Glenn Wright at shortstop.
They were just...
a great
competition
team.
Was bad.
Yeah.
And of course, back then, if you were a regular, maybe you was making $3,000
right.
a year.
That's right. Your uncle had a pretty long career in the majors, even. Maybe about 11 years.
Not my uncle.
No.
I didn't have any relatives.
Who was Heinie Mueller?
That was Southside Dutchman.
Wasn't related to you?
No relation.
Your father didn't have a brother at all that played in the major leagues?
No.
The baseball encyclopedia is wrong then.
Evidently.
Yeah, I haven't got it with me, but they've got, for your father, Walter Mueller, brother of Heinie Mueller and father of Don Mueller.
So no, that's a mistake.
Yeah, all right. I'll point it out to him. how'd you get that nickname they say you've got here? Mandrake the Magician.
You know, that old comic.
Yeah.
Byline. I evidently was from probably people up in the stands. Or sports writers,
yeah.
They'd see you hit that ball, and maybe you didn't hit it too good, but it was hit where it should have been hit.
Seeing eye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Infielders running together,
yeah.
And I did that continuously because It was better to hit it where you wanted to hit it than hit it hard and hit it at someone.
Right. You're so right.
And that's
where that... There's not enough of them that can do that these days.
That's where that was...
Yeah. Very logical. When you were playing, did you have your family move to New York during the season? Or did you live there all the time during those years?
No, I lived here all the while. They'd move when I'd find a home up there.
Lots of
normally
these old...
you couldn't stay in the same place 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
If you rented, you got it for 1 year.
Yep.
And then these people would say, "Oh, well," they'd find out you were a ball player after you had rented.
Mm-hmm.
They'd say, "Oh, next year we'll jack up that price. We'll just double that figure." So just keep
moving.
Jumping around because they were taking advantage of you.
That's interesting.
So I lived in New Jersey for, I guess, 3 years, and I lived in a little bit north of New York City, two or three years.
Many of the old-timers say that the toughest part about baseball, or that the wives had the toughest part. Being separated so much of the time, at least half the time.
If they had a family they were raising. If you're in your mid-20s and you're starting your family, and you got to drag these little kids around.
Yeah.
My dad used to drive them to New York, and then he'd fly home just to get them where they were going.
Yeah. Now, after you left baseball, what'd you do, Don?
I'm from a family of farmers
on
my mother's side,
yeah.
And I wanted to raise cattle. I did a lot of reading when I was playing ball, and I started buying farm property. I raised cattle
around this area
to 40 head over in St. Charles County.
Oh, yeah.
But there was no money in it, so I went into life insurance and sold life insurance for 7 years and tried to do part-time farming, and that doesn't work. If you're out there in the hay fields all day long and then have to gear up and get after it in the evenings, it was a bad combination.
Yep.
I tried fish farming. I built 18 ponds and was growing game fish commercially to sell.
Yeah.
And these little farm boys were stealing me blind. They were catching all my breeding stock